Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4, for Spring Semester 2020. Lecture 15. Tonight, bonds. This is a fairly extensive subject, and there is some math involved, but the math is incredibly easy to do when you are using a financial calculator. But before we get to that, let me go in here, and we're going to take a look at the markets. Or we may not take a look at the markets, depending upon what the heck. Okay, exit full screen. Now, where is my Yeehaw Finance? There it is. Okay, so now I'll go back to the video, and I can do this. Take my... share this. Now, it'll be a little rough at first, and I do apologize for that. But now, you should be able to see the screen, the Yahoo Finance screen. Is that correct? Can you see it? Just nod your head. Or something like this. Or yeah, okay. Now, as you can see, what happened while you were gone was the market went to hell. And it was right after you left that this happened. So I'm asking myself, was this a coincidence or was this you leaving the university that caused the markets to crash? Okay. Obviously, it was on its own. As I had told you before, previously in the semester, the market was going to crash. The coronavirus spread of the pandemic was not the cause. It was the trigger. And the depth of this has definitely been caused by the virus that is killing people all over the world. The markets are in free fall. They are in such a free fall as most people have never seen in their lifetimes. In some ways, this even in my lifetime, I've never seen anything quite this dramatic. This is an absolute slaughterhouse that's going on right now. And it just keeps going and going down further. I've had people ask me, well, do you think it's going to stop here? No, it's going to keep going. Right now, this market really, really wants to find a floor, but it can't. One danger in all of this is that you will see days when the market will recover. And then you'll say, oh, thank goodness, it's over. No, that's called a dead cat bounce. With excuse me to my cats here. Yeah, essentially the market surges, but then the bears just come right back in and they attack and they just drive the market down again. It is dramatic. And there are more, it's more than just the stock markets, but they are the doomsayers of what's going on in the economy. We had the analysts at Goldman Sachs yesterday evening, they put it out that their forecasting model is saying that the second quarter GDP, will contract by 24%. Now, if 24% contraction in a quarter kept going for a year, our GDP would go back to about 2013. If this keeps going at a 24% per quarter rate, if we would do that for 2 years, we're back to 2005. That's how severe this is. Part of it is this. An economy can go into a recession. Sure, we should have gone into a recession sometime in 2018 if the Fed had not been working so hard to keep it from happening by pouring money into the markets, adding liquidity, as we say, we would have found that recession. It would have been mild to moderate, and then we would have been in the recovery. And this whole thing that's going on right now would not have been nearly as dramatic in the stock markets. Unfortunately, we didn't do that. The Federal Reserve just kept pouring and pouring and pouring money in. In the last 6 months, it was frantic how much money they were feeding into the banking system. Eventually, what happens, and I had mentioned this a little bit beforehand, we get into what a famous economist named John Maynard Keynes called a liquidity trap. You can just keep pouring money in, pouring it in, and it just doesn't, eventually it just doesn't do anything. That's where we are now. The Fed can pour all the money it wants in. The government can write you guys checks for $1,000 each. It probably won't do much good. It won't change what's going to happen. Now, what's going to happen? The predictions from the best analysts are that we could hit 30% unemployment rate. That is Great Depression level unemployment. The other part of it is this. There's an old saying, it's not how far you fall, it's how fast you stop. In this case, we went from moving forward at a fairly decent pace 2 months ago to suddenly no one is out there buying the way they were. A lot of businesses are just gone. They've just closed their doors and they will not be back. So in other words, we came to a dead stop. That's something we've not seen before. An industrialized economy coming to a dead stop. So it wasn't how far we fell, it's how fast we hit the ground. And of course, the dead cat bounces a little bit, but that's another story entirely. So keep that in mind. Stay in school until this is over, if you can. But there are jobs. The next thing to make sure you understand is that in the world that I'm in finance, there is a horrible dark side. People are losing their pensions, their investments, everything. They're learning that it wasn't forever up, and that's a good thing. But it's also just ruining a lot of people's retirements and all of that. However, if you are a smart investor, you can do pretty darn well in a market like this. You just have to find the companies that are worth investing in. You have to avoid gut feelings, and you have to do analytics, and you have to think, okay, what kinds of companies are going to do good in a world like this? Well, I did my investing in that way. I invested in the companies that were working on antiviral vaccine, and the companies that were working on treatments, and the companies that were working in the online environment. And yeah, you can do very well in a market like this, but you can't just sit there holding your hands and saying, oh, woe is me, the market sucks, I will never, ever invest again. Taking that aside, if you will look at what happened here in the markets today, we had a thorough beating. I mean, just an absolute flogging came about. Now, notice, however, that the worst of it was in the Dow, the largest companies on earth, and then you had the S&P got spanked pretty hard, not quite as much as the Dow, so the large companies, but that not the enormous giants, they weren't quite as bad off in the market. And look at the NASDAQ. The small companies didn't actually take much of a hit today. In other words, they've already gotten their punishment, and we may see the NASDAQ near its floor. Also, the stimulus package that is working its way through Congress right now will have a lot of favors and help for small businesses, which may be part of why the markets didn't punish the NASDAQ companies as much as they did other companies. But if you go over here, we see that the sell-off in equities at the top end and at the middle and at the bottom was pretty severe. Now we go over here and we look and we say, all right, how did the 10-year bonds? Well, they got paddled too. Money flew out of them. So not only did we have a first stage flight to quality, we had a second stage flight to quality. There you go. Now, let's see. Really? I was trying to be so good about that, and then I got worked up about the market. So, let's try that again.
Teacher screwed up there.
Okay. Fine. I'll do it again. Now, where the heck was I? Oh. Anyway, as you could see, gold took a hit too. So there we are. We've got a lot of things going on here that are, actually gold didn't take a hit, but I should say that more or less the markets are in a free fall. It isn't going to end soon. Let me go back here and look at gold real quick. Yeah, gold had a slightly up day. Silver did too. But the reality of it is that money is just vanishing. It is going away. The markets are devaluing the fundamental engine of economic growth, companies. And they are doing it, and this is happening to a very severe extent. Where is the floor? Well, I see 1,800 or 18,000, I should say, being batted around 18,000 on the Dow. I don't see that as the bottom. The floor is probably going to be closer to 15,000, which means that we will have wiped out all of the gains of the current president's administration and some of the gains of the previous administration as well. This is a rout. We're back into the territory of maybe 2015, 2014 by the time this is over, as far as market value goes. That's where we stand right now. And we'll take this off the board now. But do appreciate that this is a rough, rough market, and it's not going to get better. There will be, as I said, good days, and there will be bad days, but at the same time, there will be more bad days than good days, and for most purposes, any day that is up, just consider that another dead cat bounce, and eventually, the dead cat will get tired of bouncing, and you will see those less and less often. How long is this going to last? Well, if we do this shelter-in-place thing much longer, it will last. The longer we have to do what we're doing, not going out, not buying, and all of that, well, the deeper this recession will be and the lower the stock market's prices on securities will get. Just the way it's going to work. So tonight, one of the safe havens in investment is bonds. You get out of equities because equities are riskier than bonds. Now, again, the basic reason for this, all other things being equal, is that stockholders get what's left over. The company must pay its bills first in a timely manner. Whenever a bill is due, they've got to get it paid. Especially, they have to pay their long-term bondholders, their debt holders. If they aren't paid, then the debt holders will just turn the company off, buy, and then they just liquidate everything. So the bondholders get their share first. So their position is not as risky as that of the shareholders. So as a result, bonds are safer, and they also, as overall, they are less, they offer a lower expected yield. If you invest in a stock, you're all in. If it goes up, great. If it goes down, boo, hiss. But if you are an investor in bonds, you expect your payments. They will have to happen, or you'll just take the company away. Hence, debt is cheaper in terms of cost, component cost of capital, than equity, just as a rule. Now, that doesn't mean that all bonds are cheap. All bonds offer great safety. That's not true. We rank bonds by how risky they are. For example, a AAA bond, and I'll talk about the ratings in a while, maybe tonight, maybe tomorrow, maybe Wednesday night. We rate bonds. There are a couple of big services that rate bonds in terms of their quality. Now, in general, we break quality down into investment grade, that's high quality, AAA, AA, single A, that kind of thing. Or, the informal term is junk bonds. If it's not investment grade, we're talking about a junk bond. We generally avoid just saying junk bond. We say a high yield bond because they have to pay a higher interest rate to attract lenders. So we have the investment grade versus the high yield. Now, high yield in the rating systems, and the rating systems, by the way, Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch are the rating systems. In their rating systems, you see things with an A, a double A, or a triple A. That's investment grade. And the higher the number of, the more A's there are, or the more capital A's there are, the safer the investment is. And therefore, the lower the coupon. In other words, the less they lenders expect them to pay in interest. You get down lower into the B's and the C's, and you're talking about junk bonds or high yield. Those offer higher interest to lenders simply because the lenders are at greater risk that the company won't be able to pay and the bondholders will have to shut down the company and liquidate it. So, generally speaking, if you are looking for safe investments, truly safe investments, you invest in those investment grade, AA, AAA, single A kinds of bonds. If you're looking for a little bit more in interest payments on the bonds, then you go for a little bit deeper down into the B's and the C's. For example, Netflix issued a pile of debt last year, over $1 billion. And they had, more or less, they'd borrowed a lot of money before. Their markets that they can penetrate are being, there's competition. And so those bonds had to offer a fairly good interest rate, or they were actually notes. They had to offer a fairly good interest rate, and hence they were considered junk bonds because they had to offer those high interest rates to attract the lenders to lend the money. And then there are other companies that are super safe. And as an investor gets older, we recommend strongly that they move more toward those safer bonds. They don't pay as much, but they also pretty much you're going to get your money because the company has to pay the bondholders first, and it's going to come every 6 months. So in other words, bonds are, first of all, fixed income instruments. You don't get to risk capital gains too much, and you don't get dividends. You just get a fixed check in the mail twice a year. Now, that's something I need to bring up real quick here. The first round that I do on this tonight will be with annual coupons. And then on Wednesday night, we get real. They're actually paid semi-annually. So that's something to bring up later. But just to begin with, remember that I gave you the distinction between the bill, the note, and the bond. Now, the generic term for all of this is bond, but the bills are debt instruments that are less than a year. The notes are between 1 year and 5 to 7 years, and bonds are the long animals. Now, I will focus for now on where the heck... I will focus for now, and I will have to get, and I will have a nicer big old whiteboard here for the next one. But for now, I'm just going to focus on bonds. First of all, a company wants to borrow money, it will issue a bond. It sells a bond, and then lenders, investors, buy those bonds. That is, means that those lenders in that primary issue are purchasing a piece of paper that promises them their money back over a certain period of time plus interest. A couple of terms to start with here. A bond has a price. That price in the primary market, that price is how much it lends the original buyers of the bonds lent the company. Then in the secondary market, those lenders might actually, those investors might actually just sell the bond to some other investor. That's the secondary market. That's the bond market as we know it. And as I had mentioned earlier in the course, the bond market is 10 times the size of the stock market. But you don't hear much about it because it's a quiet market. Because there's so much certainty that the bond is just going to pay its coupons over and over again, pay the interest and pay the principal. You don't see that price volatility that you see in stocks where every day it's shareholders winning or losing on the company's performance and operations and all that kind of stuff. Now, as far as bonds go, there are some important terms to start with. The first one is that when I talk about a bond, the face value of the bond, unless I say differently, the face value is always, always $1,000. Sometimes we will talk about it as a tenth of that. That's a quote. We'll say it's 95 on the 100. Or if you are looking actually at bond prices in like a ticker or a newspaper, they will be in quoted in 1/10 of the actual price of the bond. So the bond, if you bought it, might be $1,093, but you will see it posted as 109.3, 1/10 of its price. A story from many years ago, I knew a fellow, he was sort of one of the early day traders. He had a computer, which was pretty unusual back at that time, and he had a way he could connect to his stockbroker through it, and he fancied himself a very sophisticated, I know a lot. I got these programs that make charts of stock prices going up and down and all this. Well, he decided that he wanted to buy bonds. So what he did was he saw a bond that was quoting at something like 103. So what he did was he put in an order for 10 of these bonds. And when he got the confirmation of the order, they had taken out over $10,000 from his account. He was just having a fit. He was a very strange man. He was an optometrist and a drunk, and he carried a gun. Really deranged man. He was threatening to go and kill somebody. They ripped me off. It was $103 for 10. That'd be $1,000. They wanted $10,000. Now, Frank, no, that was the quote. The price was 10 times that. So you ordered 10 of those 103s. You were hit for about $10,300 plus commissions. Why didn't someone say that? When did they invent that? About 300 years ago, because we used to, the reason this got popular was in the old, old days, in the, like the 1800s, 1700s, prices of securities were quoted in a morning edition of a broadsheet. And then there was an evening edition. So in these, they needed to make the columns very small so that they could get a lot of prices of stocks and bonds in them. So to save a little bit of space on the columns, they were quoting bonds at 1/10 of their actual price. And that is just carried on to this day. See that thing face value? Unless I say differently, it will always be $1,000 or $100 if you're quoting. Remember the difference between quoting and the actual price. So if I say that the price is 102, that means that it is selling above par. Par is 100 or 1,000. If I say it's selling at par, that means it's selling right on the button at $1,000 in the secondary market. If I say that it's at a discount to par, that means that we have a price below 1,000 or 100. But it just when you key these in, and I'm going to show you how to do this on your calculator to get all the answers that you would ever want and impress people. Well, online, you can't do it in person anymore. We're never allowed to see each other again. You'll just automatically in the finance app, you're just going to put in FV, face value, 1,000, always. It never changes. As a matter of fact, that's a fun question to ask on a quiz or on a final. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. If I say, which of the following would you know about a bond? And I say the coupon, the face value, the yield to maturity, the yield to call, the price, you would say, I know the face value. Always. It will be 1,000. So you key that in right away. And then we move on from there. So the face value, that's one of the pieces of a bond. Now here's the next thing. Consumer debt and corporate and government debt work differently. The thing about that is, hang on here, let me see, someone's asking about a chat. You're talking to each other, really? Oh, that you found the whisper so you can talk to each other. That's, ew. Okay. Let me get that off there. That was just weird. Okay. Let me suppress that. Close. Ah, don't want to know. Okay, here's the thing, though. Consumer debt, when you take out a loan for a car or for a house, the payments are calculated in such a way that each payment, part of it goes to for the interest on what you still owe, and part of it goes to the principal. What you still owe. So, in other words, a payment services the debt, pays the interest that's owed for that month, and it amortizes the loan. It cuts down how much you owe less. So, in other words, you might have a payment on a house loan of $1,000. Well, you would find that in the early years of the loan, most of that payment would just pay the interest, it would pay interest on the balance. Later in the, so in other words, you might have $900, which would service the debt, service the loan, and then $100 would amortize the debt. Over a long period of time, as you shave that principal down, more of the money that you make in that $1,000 payment will go to the principal and less to the interest. But it's pretty staggering in the early years of a consumer loan. Because it might look sort of like this. Okay. Percent of debt. Oh, I'm sorry. I should say that. Time. Principal. In other words, how much you still owe. It's just, you barely are you making any dent in the actual loan itself. Most of this money up here is going to just pay interest. That's why we have these problems when we have a recession like this, is that because your house value, you want your house value to be higher than what you still owe on it. But if you have so little being paid in the early years of the loan, in other words, if you are building equity in the property at a very slow rate, and the economy goes like that, your house could go what we call upside down. Upside down is when your loan has a higher value than your value of the house. And once you go upside down, you don't have any incentive to stay in that loan. You'll just walk away. You'll say, nope, that's it, gone. And they foreclose on you. That's rational for you too. If you had an $80,000 house and you had paid down to about $76,000, after 5 years, well, if suddenly the housing market crashes and your house suddenly falls to $60,000, you owe $76,000 on that house. So you're upside down. You're no longer right side up. Right side up is when you have the value of the property is more than the value of the loan. You're no longer right side up. You're upside down. So essentially, you have all the incentive in the world to just walk away from that. I owe more than it's worth to me, and I will not. I'm unemployed. I would be crazy to just keep paying payments on something that is worth so much less than what I owe on it. Really? Go on, cat. Out. Out. Excuse me. Okay. Now, consumer debt, every payment pays interest, and it shaves off some principal. That's not how corporate and government debt works. Corporate and government debt, over the life of the loan, only the interest is paid, what we call the coupon. The actual face value, the amount that was borrowed, is paid off at the end in one shot. You get one last interest. If you've lent a corporation $100 million and you have a coupon of, let's say, 6% on that, and this is a 30-year debt instrument, then as the borrower, I will pay those buyers of that bond or whoever holds that bond at the time. I will make an interest payment to them. What did I say? $100 million for six. I will pay them $6 million a year for 30 years. And then at the end of those 30 years, I'll pay them one last $6 million coupon. And I will also pay off the face value of the debt. That's how it works. And the government is the same way. The government borrows $1 trillion, let's say at an average interest rate, $1 trillion in bonds. Let's say they're 20-year bonds at an interest rate of, let's say, 2%. Well, for 30 years, the government is going to pay 2% of that $1 trillion. Now, it won't be one, it will actually be a group of different kinds of bonds, different maturities and all that. But to simplify it, the government will write a check to the owners of those bonds, whether it was the original lenders or if those lenders sold the bonds to other investors in the secondary market. 2% of $1 trillion is $20 billion. So every year, out of the Treasury comes $20 billion. And then in 30 years, the government has to pay back that $1 trillion that it borrowed in 2019 or 2020. Okay, how does the government do that? Well, of course, the government, all it's going to do is borrow the $1 trillion again in 30 years, and then it will start the cycle over. They'll borrow more than that because they'll have bigger bills to pay and all that. So anyway, this is how corporate debt works. So in other words, not only do we need to know the face value, which is always going to be the same, we also will need to know the coupon on the debt. Now, as I had said before, the coupon, if a company is very safe, the coupon, the interest rate on the loan from the investors will be low. If the corporation is riskier, the coupon has to be higher to attract the lenders to this somewhat riskier instrument. If the company is very risky, well, it's going to have to offer a really high coupon. And that means that the company is putting itself at risk of being unable to make those big interest payments, hence why we can say use the term junk. But that's kind of a harsh term, politically correct. We say high yield. High yield because they have to offer a nice fat interest rate coupon in order for the to attract lenders, buyers of the bond. Now, the coupon is always expressed as a percent of par. So if I say a corporation has a 30-year bond with a 6% coupon, that means that it's 6% of 1,000. Now you're saying, no, wait a minute, do corporations just borrow 1,000? No, they borrow a multiple of 1,000, but it's expressed in as a percentage of that face. So in other words, a corporation offering a 4% coupon bond would, if they were issued at about the same time, that would be a safer bond than a bond that offered a 6%. You are not going to get something for free. That 6% is better than the 4% as far as getting a check in the mail. However, that comes at the price of risk in it. You're taking a riskier position. This company is paying 6%. It's paying that because there's somewhat more risk of default. Remember that term then from the risk premium, the default premium? That's what can make these two, one bond 4% and the other one 6%. Another thing that we need to know about the bond will be its maturity. When does the bond pay off? Now, in this regard, the maturity, a bond can start out. It's a 20-year bond issued in 2019. That means it matures in 2039. We will see the date of maturity. That's part of what it will be in the listing. Well, we're talking about a CVS 3.25% 2023. In other words, this bond will pay off its face value in the year 2023. Now, that bond probably was issued in 2023. We can't tell right away, but it would probably have been a 20-year bond issued in 2003, maybe a 30-year bond that was issued in 1993. That's kind of irrelevant because one way or the other, the bond will finish up in 2023. That's the date of maturity. Now, the term is how long the bond has remaining. So that CVS bond that I said 2023, it matures in 2023, its term is 3 years. If you said, well, I've got a Netflix, 1919. Those are 2034s probably. I don't know for sure. I should look at it. But those would probably have a maturity date of 2034. Well, they were 15-year bonds when they were issued last year in 2019. So 15 years from 2019 is the 2034. The term of those bonds is now not 15. The term of them is now 14 because there are 14 years left to maturity on the bond. That gives you sort of an idea of what term means. I could even ask that on a quick quiz. Okay, what's the term of this bond? Well, that's how long it has left in its life from right now. It's important. These are all things that you will put into a financial application in a calculator or in Excel. Truth be told, This is a lot easier in a TI-83-84 than it is in Excel. Excel is just sort of a pain in the butt. You can do more with the answers that you get in Excel, but if all you're looking for is just a quick answer to something about a bond, that app can't be beat. Now, let me work my way forward here just a little bit. Checking my time. Oh, I'm good. Okay. Face coupon maturity. Oh. Yield. Now, the yield on a bond is a percentage, just like the coupon rate is. But the coupon is what the company agreed in the bond indenture to pay its lenders, 6%. Okay, for the next 20 years, you will get 6% every year of what you lent us. If it's $10 million, you'll get $600,000 every year. That's the coupon. The yield is something else. The yield is what the market thinks it should be, the coupon should be, at any given point after the initial agreement. So suppose that I had that this company, 6% was good for it when it opened, when it lent, when it borrowed this money. 6% was appropriate for the risk level of the company. But now the economy has changed. This company's risk may have changed. Let's say that this company has gotten riskier. Okay, well, actually, this company, if it tried to borrow that money now, it's not going to be able to offer 6%. It would have to offer something like 7%. So what the yield does is it reflects what the current conditions say the value of the coupon should be. So you might see a yield that is higher than the coupon. Right now, the company should be paying more than 6%. Or you might see that the yield is lower than the 6%. Right now, the company doesn't need really 6%. It's pretty safe, doing real well, pays its bills and all that. And no other company's paying 6% anymore. So the yield might be something lower, 5%. So how does that yield form? Where do we see it? Well, we don't see it directly. It's hidden. It is a consequence of the last thing, the price of the bond. Bonds are just securities. They're bought and sold in the markets. There are buyers. Buyers would push the price of a bond up. Sellers would push the price of a bond down. It's just like any other security, it is subject to the pressures of the marketplace. So, if a company became safer, its bonds would not need to pay the 6%. And that safer would attract investors. Oh, you're paying 6%? Well, we're going to buy you because no other company like yours is paying that much now. So you would see investors move toward that bond. They would buy it and push the price up, which would consequently push the yield down. I'll show that to you. It's a mathematical relationship. On the other hand, let's say that this company got riskier. It was being difficult. It had top. It almost wasn't able to make an interest payment last year. In a case like that, investors are going to say, oh, hell no, that's 6%. That's not enough to interest me. You would see investors sell that security. That security would, and as it sold, the price would sink. It would go down. And as a consequence of that, mathematically, the yield would go up. Now, this is where we get right into the final meat of the matter. Suppose that we are 5 years after this bond was the original issue of this bond. Okay, the environment right now, it originally agreed that the investors liked the 6%. So they bought the bond at par. The company wanted $10 million. It got $10 million offering a 6% coupon. Okay, down the road, let's say 5 years. The company is very much like it was before. The original risk level, the original macroeconomic environment, they're all the same. Well, investors would be happy with that. There wouldn't be ups and downs of buyers and sellers. The bond would sell at par. It would sell at $1,000 each, or $100, whatever. If, however, 5 years down the road, the company is in serious trouble, well, that yield is going to fall. That price is going to fall. Investors are going to be selling that thing, getting out of it, and it will keep falling until the price is attractive enough to bring investors to it, to buy those bonds. So that price going down would mean that the bond is selling at a discount to par. And if it sells at a discount to par, that means that the yield is above the coupon. Discount to par means yield is above coupon. Let me say that one more time. Discount to par means that the yield is above the coupon because the coupon sucks. So the price goes down to bring the yield up. If, however, this company is doing fabulously, I mean, this is safe for every year. And I mean, this is turning into a really great company, and other companies that are like this one borrowing right now, they're not paying 6%. They're paying 5%, 4%. Well, that would get investors all kinds of excited. Geez, we can get these for and get 6% when we invest in something else at 4%. That's very similar in risk. Yeah, you're going to have investors flow in, push that price up, and that is, as a consequence, going to drop the yield down. The price above the par value, above 1,000, is we say that the bond is selling at a premium to par. The bond is selling at a premium to par. Price above par, premium to par. Price below par, discount to par. Price below par means yield is bigger than coupon. Price above par means that coupon is better than the yield. The yield represents what the market thinks right now the bond should pay for a coupon. I repeat this a couple of times, trust me, and with a bigger whiteboard, I'll just write it on there too. But you just kind of, memorizing it is one way you can do it, but it helps if you can begin to see the logic, the hard physics of the logic in this way that bonds work. Now, the one thing that is notable is that bonds generally, as a rule, and I talked about this at the beginning, the bond market is enormous, but you hardly ever hear anything about it. On these talking heads investment things, well, I think this stock is ready for a breakout to the upside, or the earnings were somewhat disappointing, so we should be selling this stock. They talk about stock, because stocks have sex appeal. They go up and down, whipsaw, and you get to talk about all the dynamics of why it went this way or why it went down. Bonds just sit there. They don't swing very much from day to day, week to week, even month to month, because there is more certainty in the bond market. The certainty isn't perfect, but there's a certainty about what you're going to get. You're going to get that stupid coupon. That's what you're going to get. With a stock, you don't know whether it's going to go up and you make capital gains or go through the floor and you're eating cat food. You don't know whether the company's going to pay a dividend or not. So there is more risk involved in stock. That makes it more attractive to talk about. That makes it more interesting on a news show. But still, know this, that the biggest by far securities market in this regard is the bond market. Corporations invest in bonds. Insurance companies buy piles of bonds. Life insurance companies do. Responsible corporations buy large amounts of bonds because they don't want to put their capital at risk, that excess capital they have. You've got $10,000 sitting there. Heck no, you're not going to buy stocks with that because you could lose that money. You don't want to. So you put it in bonds. When we talk to older investors, we move them from stocks that are risky, where they could lose everything, to bonds that aren't as risky, and they'll just get a check in the mail every 6 months for the rest of their lives, or at least a significant part of it. So that is the context in which we are working. And in the next lecture, I will go back and I'll talk about different kinds of bonds. There's some very interesting animals out there. Not all bonds are the same by any means. And we will also go through the calculation. If you always will need to know, see here, there are six of these. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yes, there are 5 of those. That, as long as you know any, what am I missing there? Really? Okay. It's getting late, folks. Now, the thing is that if you don't know one, but you know all the others, you can find the one you don't know. Back in the old days, this was a lot like work to do it. Now with a calculator, you just fill in the numbers and you say alpha solve, or in Excel you say enter after you've done the equation, and boom, there's your Uncle Bob. So it's a lot easier now, and it does allow us to get down to where we're seeing the logic more than just sweating through a long calculation. But that's for Wednesday night when we once again meet together as a happy online family. And until then, I thank you and good night.